Hallo, liebe Hörschaft, hier spricht Dan Dawson und ihr hört die 501. Folge von Checkout, dem Sport1Darts-Podcast. Viel Spaß!
That's awful, isn't it?
It was very good, to be fair.
Very impressed.
Yes.
It's better than bunting. As long as it's better than bunting, I don't care.
Hier ist Checkout, der Sport1Darts-Podcast. Mit Kevin Schulte und Micha Wattenberg.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen. Hier ist Checkout, der Sport1 Darts Podcast. Und ihr habt den heutigen Gast für eine besondere Folge schon gehört. Denn Dawson, der Name Stephen Bunting, fiel auch bereits. Das alles werden wir gleich sicherlich nochmal kurz aufrollen. Mein Name ist erstmal Kevin Schulte und ich grüße Micha Wattenberg.
Ja, hallo Kevin, ich freue mich sehr. Die 501. Folge, es ist wirklich ein Wahnsinnsjubiläum hier. Wir haben das Leck im Rückwärtsgang vollgemacht. Ich freue mich wahnsinnig, heute mit dir diese Folge aufnehmen zu dürfen. Und du hast es angesprochen, gemeinsam mit Dan Dawson. Hi Dan.
Hello. Nice to join you lads for such an auspicious 501st episode.
Before we start in English, we will continue in German a few seconds. Am Anfang war dieser Podcast ein alleiniges Projekt von mir. Ich habe die erste Folge aufgenommen mit Elmar Polke im Jahr 2018, also zur WM 2019. Das heißt, wir machen jetzt auch mit der nächsten WM 6 Jahre voll. Und das geht natürlich nur wegen vieler verschiedener Gäste, wegen toller Interviewpartner, wegen fantastischer Hörer. Deshalb der größte Dank geht natürlich an alle Hörerinnen und Hörer da draußen. Und der Dank geht auch neben den Gästen an Christian Rüdiger, der mich sehr lange über Jahre begleitet hat hier im Podcast. Und der geht natürlich auch der Dank an Micha Wattenberg. Danke auch an dich, denn wir machen ja jetzt auch schon bald einjähriges voll.
Ja, also diesen Dank, Kevin, den kann ich nur multiplizieren und zurückgeben. Du hast wirklich meinen allergrößten Respekt. Ich bin jetzt seit einem Jahr dabei, vorher schon woanders gepodcastet, aber hier bei Checkout. Also es ist wirklich schon Wahnsinn. Als du damals angefangen hast, ich weiß nicht, ob es die erste Folge war, aber zumindest in den Zeiten, wo du noch alleine warst, da habe ich schon zugehört. Das war komplett in den Anfängen von meinem Darts. Als ich das erste Mal ein Dartboard hatte, habe ich dir schon zugehört. Und das ist wirklich Wahnsinn, was du hier bei Checkout abgerissen hast und jetzt die 501. Folge. Es ist ein tolles Jubiläum und zu diesem tollen Jubiläum haben wir uns ja auch so ein paar Kleinigkeiten ausgedacht. Zum einen unser wunderbarer Gast, der hier ist, aber wir haben jetzt von Checkout auch so eine ganz kleine Kollektion von T-Shirts auf den Markt geworfen. Ein Link dazu ist in der Beschreibung. Es gibt jetzt solche in einer limitierten Auflage ein paar T-Shirts von Checkout, dem Sport1Darts-Podcast. Wer uns unterstützen möchte, kann auch für einen schmalen Taler dort ein Checkout-T-Shirt kaufen. Die gibt es in einem schwarzen und weißen T-Shirt. Soll jetzt keine große Merchandise-Kollektion von uns hier werden. Aber es gibt eben so ein paar Checkout-T-Shirts für den ganz treuen Hörer. Wer Lust hat, die zu kaufen, gerne mal in der Beschreibung vorbeischauen. Und vielleicht ist ja für den einen oder anderen was mit dabei. Und wir müssen sagen, unser eigentliches Special hier jetzt für diese Folge ist nicht diese Folge bei diesem Jubiläum, sondern ist unsere ganze WM-Vorbereitung, wo wir in diesem Jahr nochmal die extra Meile gegangen sind, Stichwort auch die 7,5-Stunden-Folge. Da haben wir versucht reinzulegen, was geht und damit der ganzen Hörerschaft auch was mit zurückzugeben.
Genau das war der Plan, dass wir eben was Besonderes schaffen, dass wir nochmal einen draufsetzen, weil es eben ein besonderes Jahr ist. Und wir haben dann aber auch natürlich von Anfang an geguckt, dass wir irgendwie mit der Folge 501 so rauskommen, dass die auf allen Kanälen dann erscheint, wenn der letzte Tag ohne WM-Darts ist. Und das ist jetzt eben am heutigen Samstag der Fall. Wir nehmen auf am Montag zuvor, also haben jetzt ein paar Tage Vorlauf, aber das ist kein Problem. Wir wollten unbedingt die 501 erscheinen lassen auf allen Plattformen am Samstag, den 14. Dezember. Und morgen, wenn ihr das hört, ist ja dann schon der erste WM-Tag. Joe Comito betritt als erster Spieler die Bühne und dann geht's los. Und dann werden wir natürlich auch täglich für euch dabei sein. Und wer das jetzt schon früher hört, der ist eventuell Patreon-Supporter oder ganz bestimmt Patreon-Supporter.
Und das sind die Leute, bei denen wir uns dann, glaube ich, nochmal doppelt bedanken müssen, dass sie uns hier nicht nur zuhören, sondern auch aus ihrem Geldbeutel mit 3,57 Euro inklusive der Mehrwertsteuer pro Monat unterstützen. Da ein ganz herzliches Dankeschön, aber auch an die Leute, die es noch nicht gemacht haben. Es ist noch nie zu spät, dort jetzt einzusteigen und uns zu unterstützen. Ansonsten findet ihr in der Folgenbeschreibung neben dem Link zu unseren T-Shirts auch noch den Link zu Discord, zu unserem Instagram-Channel, zu Twitter. Und diese Folge ist natürlich hörbar auf allen Kanälen, Spotify, Apple Podcast, RTL Plus, in der Sport1-App, ihr wisst Bescheid.
Und bei Discord, habe ich mir sagen lassen, gibt es auch ein Tippspiel für die WM, beziehungsweise nicht bei Discord, aber dort findet ihr auch dann die Möglichkeit, einem Tippspiel zu joinen. Wir packen das aber auch jetzt hier nochmal aus der fantastischen Discord-Community in die Folgenbeschreibung. Auch da gibt es dann eben noch die Möglichkeit. Es ist auch da noch nicht zu spät, denn noch teilzunehmen, wenn ihr dann ab morgen bei der WM tippen könnt.
Und damit würde ich sagen, genug der Vorrede, gehen wir dann jetzt rein in unsere Folge.
Jungs, meinem Glückwunsch, das habt ihr gut gemacht.
Okay, let's switch to English now. There was a pretty impressive German, to be fair, but I think English will be even better. So, Dan, we've introduced you. Are you doing okay? Are you good? It's the World Darts Championship. Do you already feel the magic?
I am feeling very excited about it, actually. It's daunting. It always is. The 3.5 weeks that we're there, pretty much, is a long old slog, and it's 18-hour days, day after day, but it's 18-hour days of the best darts tournament in the world. So I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. But I will probably have to hibernate for like a whole week after it finishes, because it is a grueling event. But yeah, it's getting to that time where I am genuinely getting excited about it.
And before we start to talk about the PDC World Championship 2025, we have to honor what happened at Lakeside this week. Paul Lim reached the final of the Lakeside World Championship at the age of 70, lost to Shane McGurk, the Irishman, but it was amazing achievement. Your words on the Singapore Slinger?
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, look, you can make a very strong case for Paul Lim reaching a world final, albeit the WDF one, age 70, is even more impressive and more mad than Luke Littler reaching the PDC World Final, age 16. When you look at players, some of the greatest players ever, they have had their time burnt brightly and then faded away, and they're done. They're not competitive once that finishes. And that time could be 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. You're a bit of a freak if you're playing darts at the top level or competitive level for 20 plus years. But for Paul Lim to be doing it for into a fifth decade of playing competitive darts at the highest level and reaching a world final, it is utterly ridiculous. But while he was the story of that tournament, I mean, there was loads of good stuff at Lakeside. I mean, Shane McGurk winning, he played really solidly all the way through. The kids were amazing. Paige Pauling is some player. Archie Self looks a really exciting young player. And, you know, the other finalists as well, Sophie McKinley. But I think that there's loads of great stuff there. But yeah, Paul Lim's a story. Everybody enjoys watching Paul Lim play. Although I would say 1-9 data in like 50 years of playing, I don't think it's that many. I think it's a poor return. I think you should have hit more.
So we've heard that you definitely like Paul Lim and he is one of your favorite players. But let's be honest, if we talk about maybe that one player, do you have a favorite player in the darting scene, and why is it Abdul Nasser Yusuf?
Abdul Nasser Yusuf is one of the greatest double hitters, if you're referring to one double once, that I've ever seen. I think most commentators, actually that's a lie, some commentators do have their favourites. I don't really mind who wins. There are some players that I just think are fabulous. Obviously, Steve Beaton is an obvious one. I think that I've always championed underdogs. I like underdog stories. You know, Andrew Gilding winning the UK Open when he was, you know, it was unfashionable for Andrew Gilding to be doing well. It's unfashionable for him to be in, you know, when he first made the UK Open semi-final and lost with 108 average to Michael van Gerwen. Nobody's expecting that. Nobody was cheering him on. I was. I thought it was brilliant. Because I see these guys on the tour all the time. I know what they're capable of doing. And so when they actually do get up there and do it on a big stage in a really, really big important match. And it's not just Taylor or Van Gerwen or Anderson or any of the big names over the years who've been dominating. Like it's satisfying because I'm seeing these guys live out their dreams and things that they've been battling and fighting hard to do for years and years and years. So that was, you know, seeing Andrew Gilding go on and win the UK Open several years after making the semi-final was amazing. And also, I just think he's an interesting character. I think there are lots of interesting characters in darts. That's what makes it good. They're not all, you know, you look at football and a lot of them are kind of clones. They've come through academies from age 12 and they're all media trained within an inch of their lives and they all look and sound the same and say the same things. And darts players are different. They're real people and they've got real stories and real life experience. And that is what makes it interesting to me, or one of the things that makes it interesting.
Andrew Gilding is actually a very good keyword. Kevin and I, we are not just doing the Checkout podcast. We are also the leaders of the German Andrew Gilding fan club. Do you want to join?
Yes, I do. I didn't realize it branched out to Germany. How many members do you have?
Two.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. Do you get a badge or anything, or do you just meet up and talk about Andrew Gilding?
Maybe that's a good plan, a good idea for the next year.
Well, I see You've got a load of scarves up there. Are they all football scarves on your wall there?
I do have one Luke Littler, Luke Humphreys final scarf.
What, a half and maybe half scarf from the world final?
Yeah.
Wow. Maybe, I think I saw the guy selling them out at Alexandra Palace. Yeah. That was the first time I've seen half and half scarves at the darts. I have an Andrew Gilding scarf. They
really
exist. Yes. He was.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, his partner was selling them at the match play. And I think it was £15. I paid £20. Therefore, I have the most expensive Andrew Gilding scarf in the world. Stick that on your wall.
You're definitely the man for our Andrew Gilding fan club. Perfect. Yeah. And Dan, next question. You're always there at the Players' Championship events, at the behind-closed-door events, as we all know. You're super deep into the darting scene for this very special episode. We ask for a special story from you. Can you tell us one of your favorite stories that has happened behind closed doors somewhere and is not known already in the public? And
there's been loads, haven't there? Now you've put me on the spot. I'm trying to think of any. There are loads of weird things that happen on the behind closed doors ones. I mean, I remember we ended up, it was like a semi-final or something, and the entirety of the play just got stopped because there was it was some badly put down tape or whatever, and players kept walking over and it was making noise. I can't remember if maybe it was Stephen Bunting who was involved in that game. It was one of the women's series. I wasn't actually at it. Where one of the booths genuinely collapsed on top of Beau Greaves. This makes it sound really, really tin pot and badly run. They're not. They're very professional events. But there are those floor events, and I realise they're not open to the public, so they're not the sort of thing that everybody can go to on a regular basis, unless you know somebody who can get you in, and even then that can be quite tricky. But they are. Really, they're otherworldly things. You just walk around what is usually a leisure center and you'll see the best darts players on the planet all there fighting it out. And yeah, it's not as big time as the World Championship or the Match Play or the big TV tournaments, and not as much money involved, but it's big money for normal people. You know, the £15,000 for winning one of those now, or, you know, it used to be £10,000 or £8,000 prior to that, but it was big, big money. And these were guys who were, you know, it was their biggest payday. And if they didn't go and win, then they wouldn't be, well, I'm not saying they wouldn't be able to pay their bills, but it makes a massive, massive difference. So just seeing all of those players in those tense environments on things that really do matter to them, it might not matter to Van Gerwen, it might not matter to Gary Anderson or whatever, but they do matter to a lot of those players there. The atmosphere in them is really interesting, I would say, in some ways more so than some of the big tournaments. But I'm trying to think of any really good anecdotes. Bear with me, something will come to me, lads. I'll just shout one at you halfway through this podcast.
Yeah, you can just tell it later when you remember, no problem at all. So maybe an easier thing, because that's more personal for you, what's the funniest thing that has happened to you while commentating?
Funniest thing that's happened to me whilst commentating, that's an interesting one. What have we had?
why do I not have any anecdotes when I've
worked? Was there any moment where you just, I don't know, told utter nonsense and you just realized a second afterwards or whatever?
Oh yeah, but I do that all the time. That's like my brand. Like, just chatting nonsense is kind of my thing. I'm genuinely trying to think. I mean, there are tales. I won't name the commentators. There are tales with... I mean, when I used to do it with Rod Harrington on the European tour, when that first started off in the streaming, Rod was incredible because I'd be sat there with all my notes that I've spent hours prepping and, you know, nervous starting out doing it. I hadn't commentated on darts before. So I put in loads of effort to try and be up to speed on what was going on and who the players are and everything like that. And Rod would just walk in, like, even after it's started, like it, two visits into the match, eating an ice cream or a biscuit or whatever, stick his headphones, I'll go, who's this playing then? And then just sit there and talk about it with some real insight. He was incredible. He actually taught me to perhaps be a bit more chilled out about how you do it and not be so intense. But in terms of like things going, there must have been loads of things that have gone wrong. I'm trying to think. I can't think. Again, I've got no anecdotes for you. I'm the crappiest guest known to man, lads. Oh, tell me something in your years in darts. I've got nothing. I've got absolutely nothing to tell you.
Dan, we already spoke about players you like, your favorite players. Are there some players you don't like so much? Or are there players where the vibe is not so good?
I wouldn't say there are players I don't like, but there are, when you're interviewing players, some of them are easier to interview than others. I will say that. Some of them seem to revel in making life difficult for interviewers. Dirk is one of them, and I like Dirk. I like Dirk a lot, but I know when I'm going to interview him, you can ask him a question and he will purposefully just disagree with you. You see, he could be the most, you know, he could have averaged 120 and you say, Dirk, you've played well there, haven't you? And he goes, no, I didn't. He will automatically say the opposite. And he quite likes making interviewers feel awkward. But once you know that, you can sort of get around it. I don't think there are some, as I say, some are better to interview than others. You've done 500 episodes of this, so you've interviewed some darts players. I can imagine you found some more difficult than others to actually get anything out of. Although I can't really talk because you've already interviewed me and I've given you no answers to any of your questions so far. But Dirk can be awkward. James Wade likes to make things awkward. I'll say that. He's an interesting interviewee. And then there are some just aren't particularly confident. They're quite shy. Like the aforementioned Andrew Gilding, of whom we are all massive fans, getting him to talk in an interview can be tricky sometimes. He's quite happy to just give one word answers and not really elaborate on a great deal. But that's because I don't think he's that comfortable being in front of a microphone or a camera.
So our conclusion for today, Dirk and Dan are awkward at interviews.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In similar ways, yeah.
Who would you say is the worst loser on tour? What you've seen, maybe the best rage quit behind closed doors?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
You say that for all questions and then don't really answer.
That's a good question. Who is the worst? It's a weird one. There are some sort of Jekyll and Hyde players. Like Gary Anderson will always say, he doesn't care, it doesn't matter if he loses, he'll just shake the guy's hand and walk off stage. But then you have seen him get really, really angry sometimes when he loses and get angry about things that have happened. He thinks something's happened in the game when nothing has happened. But then he'll be fine afterwards. Gary can be a bit like that. Who's worst? Jermaine Watamela likes to sulk sometimes when he loses. I've seen Jermaine stab himself in the leg with a dart once after losing. But he doesn't lose very much anymore. He's winning lots of games. So mercifully, his leg is remaining puncture free at the moment.
His legs are getting better right now, you mean?
Yeah.
Then we all know that you do like the European Tour.
Who doesn't? Do you like the European tour?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes, of course.
More
you
than
do.
A bit.
You know, yeah, good.
What's your happy place on the European tour? Do you have one favorite host city? And maybe do you have one favorite hotel room you visited?
I have to say, there are lots of different reasons for it. If you go to the Belgian events, the crowds are amazing. They are the perfect darts crowds in that they are loud and they're noisy, but they're respectful as well. Most of the European tours, as you know, are in cities around Germany. I think a lot of they're all quite similar. The Munich one over Easter is really good. I like the venue. I like the sort of atmosphere for it. What do they always play? Skandal and Sperrbezirk.
Yes.
Yeah, good tune.
It's by Münchner Freiheit. That's the band.
There we go. I didn't know that, but I wouldn't have got there if I'd had to guess it myself. Munich's good. Göttingen's good. Going back there next year. Göttingen was a good city, good venue, and there was a tapas bar just around the corner from the hotel, which stayed open really late so we could all go and have a drink afterwards. And dance on the tables and stuff. That was excellent. I'm hoping that tapas bar is still there when we go back there next year.
Because this is an anniversary episode for us, you see that we're not just talking about the 16 days in Ellipelli, but we will do in just a second. But before, let's talk about how darts has developed and how it could continue. Dan, when and where did you get in touch with darts first?
It would have been the 2009 World Championship. That would have been the first one. I started covering it for the radio in the UK. I always wanted to be like a football commentator or football reporter, or cricket's the other one, a game which would be completely alien to you German people. But they were the ones I wanted to do. That was the job I wanted to do, and I'd spent a number of years working in the radio to try and do that. And then I got made redundant. So I didn't have a job. And a friend of mine got offered the chance to go to cover the World Championship. And he either didn't want to do it or he was busy. But he basically put my name forward. And I didn't know a great deal about darts. I'd watched the Lakeside each year, but I was no expert on it. And the guy who was employing me just said, "Don't worry, after 3 days, you will be." And I wasn't after 3 days. It took years and years and years. But as soon as I walked through the door, I fell in love with it. It was absolutely brilliant. So I did 2009 World Championship. I did the radio coverage for the Worlds for 3 or 4 years, maybe. And there was a couple of UK Opens, I think, as well. And then they started streaming the European Tour events. And there weren't many of them originally. We just did a couple the first year. It was Gibraltar and Dusseldorf. Dusseldorf. Now, the Maritime Hotel, that's a European tour venue. That's good. I think they still use it for the celebrity pro darts thing they're doing.
The Pommy Darts VM.
Yeah, that's good. But yeah, once they started doing that, I started working on those. And then I was doing the Pro Tour events, the Players Championships and the UK Open qualifiers when they were streaming those. But I was still working my day job. So it was all, I was having to take holiday just to work on the darts. And it got to the point where I was working all my holiday for about 5 years. So I didn't have a day of holiday for about half a decade because all of it was taken up with going to darts events and commentating on darts. So that's pretty much where I fell in love with it straight away and then just did as much as I possibly could. And I was very lucky that loads of opportunities came my way because they started streaming events. Now I find myself here talking to you guys on the 501st episode of the Checkout podcast.
Just real quick, what was your job before?
I worked on the radio reading the news. So I did like lots of serious news, like really boring, like stabbings and government cuts and things like that. But sports, what I wanted to do. And I did little bits of sport where I could, but then darts just completely took over.
Dan, I have good news for you. The El Punto Tapas Bar in Göttingen, besides the Lokhalle, is still open.
It's still open. Yeah. Excellent news. Right, all down the El Punto. I'll see you there, lads.
Thanks for the long answer, so I had enough time to Google it.
See, I can do some things, but I just can't give you the answers you want.
If you compare darts back then when you started watching it with today, could you have imagined this development?
I don't think I could, to be honest, particularly seeing the European tour. The European, I always bang on about the European tour, but the European tour, the growth in the game has been in places like Germany and Belgium over the last few years. Certainly Germany, the last sort of 3 years or so, particularly Belgium. But seeing crowds of 4,000, 5,000, we got 5,000 in Risa. Seeing those crowds turn up and comparing that to when we first went there and we were, you know, we were playing to dozens of people on a Friday afternoon. It was nothing. Seeing it grow like that, seeing the numbers of people watching in Germany, like when Gabriel Clemens made his world semi-final and there was 4 million people watching in Germany or whatever it was. It was astonishing, and it's really exciting to see other people from all around the world falling in love with the sport. And look, Luke Littler turning up in the last year or so has taken it to another level. Everybody's gone absolutely darts mad, certainly over here. I would imagine it's similar in Germany. It feels that way when we've been over there this year. But it feels like that everywhere we've gone this year with people asking about Littler. I don't know how long that goes on for, but at least some of those new people watching the sport will stay with it because they'll realise that darts is amazing and they'll really get into it. So yeah, it has been an amazing journey it's on. I don't know how much bigger it can get. I don't know how big the sport can get. It could get massive, but you know, at the same time, that's, you know, is it going to rival things like golf or whatever, which I find incredibly boring? I don't know if it ever will, but if it keeps on growing and growing like this, then that's a great thing because we're going to see more people getting into the game, more players from all over the world becoming competitive. I think it makes it more interesting to have people from all over the world going head to head, and it's going to make, you know, more viable for players to play. One of the big differences has been in players, how much money they're making. It's still difficult if you're just starting out in the game and you're not near the very, very top. But back, you know, 10 years ago or something, the number 64 in the world would have struggled, I think, to have just made a living from darts. Now, they could do it conceivably. I think that's a big, big difference.
Looking at this journey and development, what would you say were maybe about the last 10 or 15 years were the very key moments and the very key guys that took darts to the next level? And do you think, like, at this World Championship, if we maybe take that reference, that like the Luke Littler, Fallon Sherrock match that's probably, maybe, possibly on the line could be one of these moments as well for the bright majority?
Yeah, it could be. I think, you know, it's stories that drive this sport, aren't they? I mean, Phil Taylor was obviously an incredible story and his excellence, and he did mad things on a dartboard. Then Michael Van Gerwen did it and he was the leading light. But then these other stories have come along. You know, Rob Cross, that story is like something out of a Rocky film. Turning up, winning the world championship in your first year, not being able to beat Van Gerwen over and over again, and then beating him, then beating Phil Taylor in his last ever professional game. If you'd written that as a story, then people would think it's a bit cheesy and it's a bit daft, isn't it? But that actually happened. The Fallon Sherrick thing was obviously mad, the reaction that got. Luke Littler, the next one. I mean, I don't know what else we can do. We've had woman winning games at the World Championship. We've had child nearly winning the whole World Championship. Unless, if you're looking for a new story that people outside of darts are going to take notice of, unless a talking dog turns up and wins the World Championship, then I'm struggling to see how we top it. Because even if Luke does win the World Championship this year, I don't think it's as big a story as last year on his debut when he was 16, come not out of nowhere, but you know, it was his first time he'd been seen by a lot of people watching darts. For him to nearly go and win it and nearly win it the way he was playing, that story is a difficult one to beat. So even if he does win the next 3 world championships in a row, I don't think it'll get as much attention as his debut year. But he's still going to get a lot of attention, and it's doing him a load of good, and it's doing the game a load of good, and everybody involved in the game.
how big for the development of darts was his crazy run last year at the Worlds?
Massive, massive. I think that, you know, there's I think darts is all, I don't know if it's different in Germany, actually. You lads can probably tell. Darts in this country has always had a stigma attached to it. And it was just, oh, it's just overweight, middle-aged, white guys. They're all drunk. They're all, you know, it's got this. That's, look at the sponsors we get. We're not getting sponsored by Rolex and BMW and Audi and all of these. We're not getting the sponsors that golf gets, for example, because even though loads of people watch it, it is massively, massively popular. And the TV companies absolutely love it because it always gets a very, very good set of figures in terms of how many people are watching. The sponsors, the advertisers, aren't the ones we get that are associated with football or golf or some of the other sports. And I think Luke Littler is somebody who can help change that. You look at some of the deals. He's got a contract with Boohoo Man. Now, Boohoo Man, I don't know if they're big in Germany, but they're a clothing brand. They are pretty much exclusively involved with footballers, you know, model type people. And then there's Luke Littler, this 17-year-old darts player who's now in that company. I think it's changing the perceptions of what people who aren't into darts think about darts. And I think that's a good thing.
I will have two very short questions. And please just answer these two questions with yes or no.
Okay.
Okay. So first question, if Luke Littler would have hit that double two, would he have won the World Darts Championship?
Yes.
And do you think Luke Littler is going to get the votings to be the BBC Sports Personality of the Year?
No.
Okay. So let's take a look at this year's World Championships. We know the battle of the two Lukes. This is dominating the headlines. Who else is on your list to win the Worlds?
Well, I think that it's open. What we have seen in the last couple of years is, yes, Luke Humphries has been winning the majority of the titles. And if it's not him, then Luke Littler's got a very good chance. But we are seeing winners from outside, not just those two, but outside the top 20, the top 30 even. I think that there are more potential winners than perhaps ever. And that's such a difference. Say the first 2009, 2010, I remember interviewing Phil Taylor and the likes of them. And Phil Taylor would say, I reckon there's probably four or five people who can win the World Championship. Really, realistically, I don't think there's many. There are players out there outside of that who can win one-off games, but going all the way and winning the whole thing, I don't think that that's going to change. I think the number of players who can win has increased year on year on year. And it's all about the system that we've got and the opportunities that we've got and players taking it more seriously and more professionally. So with that in mind, I think loads of people could potentially win the World Championship. Nobody, really, I'm speaking to, nobody's talking about Michael Smith. And Michael Smith's record at the World Championship is astonishingly good. Now, I know he's not had the best year, and I know that he wasn't amazing after he won the World Championship. He says that he just put his feet up and didn't really make an effort. But he is making an effort now, and we know that the World is different from other events. It goes on so long, you can see players playing themselves into form. If you can get through the first round or two as one of the seeded players, then after Christmas, it can be completely different because it's you know that they've got a couple of wins under their belt. You know how good they can be. And Michael Smith has shown repeatedly at the World Championship with all those runs to the finals and, of course, winning one of them, that he might have the chance to go and do it again. I think he's a great shout to be in the mix, because I quite like his section of the draw, his quarter of the draw as well. If you're looking at more sort of random picks, I do think that Wessel Neiman is a real danger. I think
that's my name. That's my name.
Yeah, Wessel. He is a good shout, isn't he?
And what do you think? Which player is most likely to ruin Humphries Littler semi-final? All is waiting for.
Well, I mean, I think I do think that Humphries probably comes through his quarter and reaches the semis, but there's half a dozen players there I'd be scared of. Wade, Bunting, Dirk, Dedeker, Hetter, Woodhouse even, Watermaina, even Wesley Plaisier. Wesley Plaisier could easily come through his opening game against Azumoto and then beat Peter Wright. He could be a real danger to him. In terms of Littler, I've got a sneaky feeling Rob Cross. Now, I could see Littler completely bombing in this World Championship. There's a real chance of that. He's had a number of early exits in ranking tournaments. We know that. When he's amazing, he looks unstoppable. But he's not amazing all the time. And even if he's really, 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 really good, he can still lose. And somebody like Rob Cross, who's in his quarter of the draw, can beat anybody. I mean, they met, obviously, in the semi-finals last year. And I think four sets in, Rob Cross is averaging 108. He was 3-1 down, but that probably killed him, to be honest. But it could have been very, very different. I think that we're not going to see a Humphreys-Littler semi-final. I don't know which one of them won't make it. I just think there are landmines in their draw all over the place. But I could easily see, you're going to see surprises, you're going to see shocks. And I think that one of them will fail to make the semis. I don't know which one. It could be Bunting taking out Humphreys, for example, or it could be Rob Cross taking out Littler. Maybe neither of them make it, but that's the thing. If we knew what was going to happen, we wouldn't play the games. But it's exciting, isn't it?
So they are not just landmines in their draws, but also landmans. Let's mm-hmm. talk about Gary Anderson real quick. What do you think is more realistic? Gary Anderson playing again in the Premier League or Gary Anderson becoming world champion and then retire?
Well, I think if he becomes world champion, I don't think he retires. I do think there's a chance he becomes world champion and then says, I don't want to be in the Premier League. I think that's a genuine thing. I think that one of the reasons that Gary has been so good over the last year or two is because he hasn't had all the demands of playing Premier League and World Series and everything. He's only just dabbled in the Euro Tour. I think he played two this year. He just happened to win the second one, so he just sacked off the rest of it. He didn't want to go and play any more Euro Tours. He doesn't want to go away and do all this stuff unless he really has to. He had to go back to the Euro Tour after 8 years away if he wanted to get into the big TV tournaments because he dropped down the rankings so much. But he's gone there and he's won one. He's been brilliant on the Pro Tour. I think that Gary Anderson is, it's quite funny, really, if he goes and wins the World Championship, catapults himself right up the rankings into the top five or wherever he end up, and then just says, nah, you can keep your Premier League. I'm not bothered with it. I think there's a real chance of that happening. But once players get offered guaranteed tens of thousands of pounds, some of them who previously said, yeah, I wouldn't take the Premier League, all of a sudden they have a change of heart because money's great, isn't it?
Now let's have a look at Germany, at German darts, of the development of German darts. How's your opinion on that? Not just the players, but also something like attendances, crowds and so on.
Well, I tell you what, when going back to your question about the big players that have helped grow the game, Max Hopp is a massive one. You know, I was there seeing Max Hopp in Saarbrücken when he won that European Tour title. And that was a big thing. It was a big thing for Max. It was a massive thing for German darts. And he's one of the guys who helped get the ball rolling in terms of really giving German fans somebody to cheer for. Obviously, we've had Gabriel Clemens come along, Martin Schindler, and now Ricardo Pietrzko as well. I think all three of them are fantastic. Gabriel, I find, is one of the most frustrating and maddening players. Being a Gabriel Clemens fan must be one of the hardest jobs in the world because every game is stressful. He finds ways to lose games he should win. He wins games he should never get close to winning. Everything is just chaotic with Gabriel Clement. I don't know how he hasn't won something already. He's been in so many finals. He's got so much talent. But Germany's got some really, really good players. Martin Schindler has been utterly, utterly brilliant for the last two or three years. I've been so impressed with how he lost his tour card, came back even stronger. And I think, you know, at the Worlds, Shindy, if, you know, say if Van Gerwen runs into somebody and has a poor performance, like he did against Scott Williams in the Worlds last year, of course, but say he was to lose to Brendan Dolan or James Hurrell, for example, or Gary Anderson or whoever, Martin Schindler could find his way through to the quarterfinals. And if Van Gerwen and or Anderson have both gone, Because there are dangers of Ross Smith in there as well, Jeffrey de Graaf. Martin Schindler could find his way through to the semi-finals of the World Championship. And I don't think that would be the most surprising thing in the world. Because when you look at his big stage performances on the Euro Tour, they've been brilliant this year. His TV form hasn't been as good. But we know that that can change. And the world is such a different place. He got so close, of course, to beating Michael Smith the year that he won the World Championship. I think that Martin Schindler is going to have a big run at the World Championship one year. I don't know if it's going to be this year, but it could be, looking at the draw.
Do you have a favourite German player?
I always have a soft spot for Martin Schindler because I remember him working as a steward on the Euro Tour. And I remember watching his first game on the Euro Tour against Raymond van Barneveld. I think he took three legs off him in the end. But he's just a nice guy, isn't he? He's a good lad, is Martin Schindler. But they all are. I get on with Gabriel, I get on with Ricardo. Ricardo is, I think, absolutely hilarious on stage. I don't know whether he's going to like laugh or pick a fight with somebody or the whole crowd. I don't know which he's going to do, but it's certainly interesting. I don't know how he's going to make use of the board. He does some strange things on the board as well. I just think he's really, really good. That Euro Tour he won is one of the most astonishing displays I've seen on the final day of a Euro Tour from anybody. But I think they're all great, but I've got a soft spot for Schindy because I've known him longer, to be honest.
And if we compare German number one and German number two, what is the difference maybe between Martin Schindler and Gabriel Clemens? Clemens, I mean, he was in the semifinal 2 years ago. Schindler has not yet reached the last 16 at the Alley Pally, but has been very successful on Euro Tour. So what are the differences between those two players?
I don't know. You know what? So much of this game is luck, right? And you know, you can be the best player in the world, but you still need a little bit of luck sometimes. You know, you only have to look at Luke Littler at the Grand Slam. He was amazing at the Grand Slam. He's breaking records, you know, more 180s and very nearly the highest tournament average that we've ever seen. And yet, Mike Dedeker could and maybe should have beaten him. And if he hits that dart at the bullseye, all those records that Littler went on to break that week, they're just gone. They're not there. He doesn't break those records because Mike Dedeker knocked him out. You do need a little bit of fortune. And I often wonder with Gabriel, if he hadn't missed, I think he missed darts to beat Gary Anderson in his first PDC final. If he hadn't missed those, would that have changed something for him? Would he not have lost and lost and lost every final he's had? I don't know. I don't think Gabriel knows. Nobody knows, really. We're just guessing. But Gabriel Clemens, I just think that there's something that he needs to address. And once he does, he will be even more dangerous than he is now. Martin Schindler has done it. He's turned himself into a winner. He's won a couple of Euro Tour titles. And I think he'll win more PDC ranking events. Ricardo Pietrzczko, look, he's got very good very quickly. I like him. I'm excited for him. I don't know what his ceiling could be. But I think between those three, they could all be jockeying for position as German number one, two, three over the next few years because I think they're excellent. And look, who knows? We might see more German players break through and make their mark over the next couple of years because it doesn't take very long for a player to come out of nowhere and be really, really good. You can look at the likes of Kian van Veen or whoever. Then they turn up and you just think you're obviously an excellent darts player. Josh Rock, another one. Within 2 years, he's in the sort of top 20, top 16.
So we've talked about Martin Schindler, talked about Gabriel Clemens. You've mentioned Ricardo Pietrzczko quite briefly. What's your opinion on the other three German participants at Alley Pally? Florian Hempel, Nico Springer, Kai Gotthard. What's your opinion on them?
Well, I tell you, I really like Nico Springer. Nico Springer's a really talented lad, and he's got his head screwed on. I remember speaking to him, interviewed him a couple of years ago, and he was saying how he wasn't in any rush. He wanted to finish his studies. I think he was training in law or some sort of legal profession. But he was still playing, and he was getting better, and you could see it. And I think there's a lot to come from him. Kai Gotthard, I've seen him play infrequently, not enough, and I've not spoken to Kai, so I can't give you any great insight into Kai. Florian Hempel, I think, is a again, an amazing story. And he's a bit like Gabriel in that you don't know what to expect from him. The way he turned, I don't think I've ever seen anybody as quickly go from not throwing a dart to beating the likes of Dimitri Vandenberg on the world championship stage as Florian Hempel did. I mean, it was only about 3 years from picking up a dart to being on the Ali Pali stage and beating Dimitri and playing unbelievably. The first time he beat Dimitri, by the way. He has got talent. He's evidently a brilliant sports person. His hand-eye coordination is good. Obviously, he played handball. And I would like to see him progress, but he does feel like he's a little level below the likes of Ricardo, Schindler, and Gabriel at the minute. Doesn't mean he can't get up to their levels and maybe even surpass them, because he's evidently a very talented sports person.
2024 was crazy so far. Obviously, we have seen Mike De Decker, Richie Attaus, Jermaine Vatimena, Martin Lukman reaching a TV major finals. Who do you think will be the next surprise finalist?
Well, are there any surprises anymore? That's the thing. You know, if Wessel Naiman makes a major final, is that surprising? You know, is Jan van Veen makes a major final, is that surprising? I don't really think it is. If you're looking at players who perhaps nobody's talking about at the minute, I'm just having a little plod through the world championship lineup. I think Wesley Plaisir is a very, very dangerous player. I've already mentioned how brilliant I think Shindy is. Look, Josh Rock's going to be like world number 16 come the start of the year. Like, he's not been in a major final yet. He's going to get to one. That's nailed on. The lad is absolutely amazing. But in terms of major finalists or major winners, I wouldn't have picked Martin Lukman before he went and did it, but he absolutely deserved to, because he played brilliantly from the start of the qualifiers right the way through the Grand Slam. But I think Josh Rock will be one of them. If you're looking for a first-time major finalist, Josh Rock has a very, very good chance of doing that. But somebody like Wessel, Van Veen, there's a whole bunch of them I could name.
And maybe one German, is it Shindy?
Yeah, Shindy. Shindy's the most likely for me, I think. Ricardo, Gabriel, Shindy, I think they're all at a level where it's a possibility.
And which players, maybe also a bit more unknown players, are you looking forward to this year at the Worlds?
I always like seeing the Asian players play. I think that there's, you know, the Asia Tour, it took a hammering, obviously, during COVID, where they weren't playing much. And I think you could see that in some of their performances when they were getting opportunities. But then we saw last year, having had a full season of Asia, or a couple of seasons of Asia Tour, that they really were bringing some of their best stuff. And so Goto, I think, is really good, the Japanese lad. He's got Mickey Mansell and then potentially Johnny Clayton. He'll be a danger. But the Philippines has become such a hotbed of darts. And I think that you could pick any number of players from the Philippines and think they're going to be dangerous. Everybody knows Lawrence Ilagan, but Alexis Toilo, I think, is good. He has qualified, hasn't he? Have I made that up? Yeah, he is. He's got, yeah. Richard Veenstra. I don't know a great deal about Sandro Erik Sosing, but Alexis Toilo, I think, might be one to watch. They've got good games in them. You're just looking for that one star from Asia who can really emerge and be dangerous. I think Seigo Asada, I thought he was going to be the one. Seigo Asada from Japan was absolutely brilliant. And he got so close to getting a tour card. In fact, maybe he did win a tour card and didn't make use of it 1 year. But again, he got very, very close another year at a Q school to come through. I think that if we get an Asian player who's really, really good, Paul Lim aside, obviously, then that can help the growth of the game in that part of the world in the same way that Max Hopp helped it in Germany. And if it does get the ball rolling and we've got a genuine, an Asian player who's a genuine threat for big titles, then that's going to make things even more interesting for things like the Slam, the World Championship, and hopefully more opportunities. You'll get on the tour. I know that it's very, very difficult for players. Christian Perez
from the Philippines, obviously, has got on the tour. It's really, really difficult for him. You know, he had visa problems for a number of months. Then he was traveling back and forth. He's even relocated with his family over to the UK now. But now I think he's got to go and win his tour card back. So who knows how long that lasts.
You already mentioned his name. Do you like Lawrence Ilagan as much as Wayne Mardell does?
I'm a big fan of Lawrence Ilagan. He's just good to watch. He hates sleeves. Hates sleeves. Why didn't he just wear a vest? I think he'd be allowed. I haven't checked the rules on this, but I don't know why he wears a shirt with sleeves when he spends all his time trying to roll them up. Just cut them off or cut them shorter. Phil Taylor used to do it to his darts flies. Lawrence could do it to his sleeves if he wants. Yeah, I think he's very entertaining. I don't think that he's going to go and be a real danger in the World Championship in the latter rounds, but he's quite capable of winning games and more than the odd game as well. So, but I think there's lots of players like that. That's the danger of, you know, we can sit here and talk about, oh, Humphreys and Littler, they're on collision course in the semi-final. There's so many players who are capable of having a game which just takes one of them out, and that's that.
Will this be the last World Championship in Ali Pally?
No, I think it'll be Ali Pally for years to come. I don't see where they'd go. I don't see why they'd go. The money that they make from ticket sales is not insignificant. I mean, they're going to 128 players anyway, aren't they? So it's going to be even bigger. They'll get another 3 or 4 days out of the tournament, so there's more sessions to sell tickets. But TV rights is the big thing. That's in most sports, you know. And I think, you know, one of the things we were told during COVID was how our sport, it's not the same without fans there. And it sort of isn't, but it still goes on, still happened. You know, it does carry on because TV rights are the big deal. And TV rights, they'll get more and more money year after year for them because people want to watch it. And part of the reason they want to watch it is because they're tuning in and seeing the best tournament in the world take place in an incredible venue with an amazing atmosphere. So why would you move it? I see no better option than Ali Pally. I think it works. They theoretically could move it into another hall in Ali Pally, which is much bigger, but I don't think they need to. I don't think they will. They'll just make the tournament bigger. They'll have some extra days, and I think it'll carry on in its glorious home.
And in general, what should be the next steps for the PDC? What do you hope for, maybe, and what do you expect?
Well, I mean, all these decisions are made by people who actually have real jobs rather than me, who gets paid to sit and talk about games of darts for a living. But I personally would like to see one of the big week-long tournaments go abroad to Germany or Belgium. I know we've had the European Championship in Belgium before, and obviously it's found its home in Dortmund. Dortmund. In Germany, and it's great, by the way. I really like that venue. Massive crowds, really good atmosphere. But I would like to see one of the Grand Slam or the Grand Prix. I think they really could find a home somewhere in Germany or Belgium where you're going to get big crowds in a good venue. The problem is it's going to cost money. It's going to cost money for the TV companies, for Sky, to go and do that abroad. It will cost them more money to do it. So I would imagine that they are not that keen on the idea of having to take a whole team out to Germany. I know they do it for the World Cup of Darts, but that's a smaller event than something like the Grand Slam or the Grand Prix. So I think that's one of the things that would be holding it back. But personally, that's what I would like to see. I think that if this game is going to continue to grow internationally, then it would be good to have one of the bigger, more prestigious events going to an international country. And the prime candidates are Germany and Belgium.
Should darts get even more global? Do we need, for example, a World Series event in South Africa, or what Kevin always wants, a thriller in Manila, a World Series event in the Philippines? What do you think?
I think the Philippines is brilliant. I mean, I would love to go back to Tokyo. I think Japan You know, I know the Bahrain World Series is the Asian leg of it, and there's obvious reasons why they're going there. It's because Bahrain's paying for it, and, you know, people can complain about that, but that's what is keeping the lights on, and that's, you know, one of the reasons why players are playing for big money. There's certainly a couple of players absolutely love it out there. But I do think that the powerhouse of Asia in darting terms is the Philippines and Japan. They're the big markets. They're where the most players are. And I think that certainly in Japan, when we went there, the crowds were absolutely great. It is hugely expensive to go and do those World Series events in places like that. And there is a lot of stuff that needs to be done to make it happen. You've got to sort venues and sponsors and all sorts of stuff. It is a very, very big operation just to make one of these two-day events happen. And you've got to get bang for your buck for that. You've got to make sure you get coverage and make sure that you're emphasizing, you know, if you're going to do this event, make sure that people get to see it and make sure that it has an impact. Look what they do in New York and Madison Square Garden. I cannot imagine the PDC make any money from that New York thing. In fact, I would imagine it costs them an awful lot of money, but they do it to promote the sport. That's what the World Series is about. And it's difficult to organize. It's costly to do, but they see a value in it. I think there would be immense value in having that Asian leg of the World Series in somewhere like Manila or Tokyo. But as things stand, it looks like Bahrain is the Asian leg of it. I don't know how long that'll last. I mean, we went to Gibraltar for a few years. That didn't last forever. We started going to places with better crowds and more fitting of the European tour. But yeah, I think that would certainly be something I'd like to see. I would love to see one in Africa as well. I think South Africa would be the obvious place. But I think we're some way off yet getting a consistent standard of player out there to really make it worthwhile. We've got that in Asia. We've got an affiliate tour set up. They're playing each other. They're getting better. And we've got good players. Australia, we've had that for a number of years, although at the minute, Australian darts doesn't look to be in a great place in terms of the players they've got coming through, but historically it has been very good. I think America is getting better, or North America is getting better, America, USA and Canada. But Africa as a continent, and more specifically South Africa, probably needs a bit longer to get more players coming through to a decent standard. And then maybe you're looking at a World Series event there.
And speaking about popularity of darts, how popular will darts become? What is possible? The sport is really in the spotlight once a year during December and in the early days of January, obviously. The rest of the year is well below that. What needs to happen to become even more popular during the rest of the year?
I think they've just got to keep doing what they're doing. I mean, it's grown and grown and grown. And it's grown because A, the sport's great, and B, we've got some really good stories. And you can't just make them up. You know, you can't just go and pick a Fallon Sherrick, you know, off a shelf and go, there you go, there's your sports story for this year. All you can do is create a system where these stories can happen. And things, you know, the Rob Cross story, the Fallon Sherrick story, the Luke Littler story, all of these stories happened, but they happened because things are in place to give him a chance. Rob Cross only turned up because there was an option for amateur players to go and play at the UK Open. And then there was the Challenge Tour that he could play on. Fallon Sherrick, it was the Women's Series, et cetera, et cetera. And Luke Littler, JDC, Development Tour. You put these things in place and you trust that the players, whoever they are, turn up and give you these stories. And darts has been blessed with these stories over the last few years, and there'll be more stories. Who they are, what they are, I do not know, but if the World Championship, like you say, that's more people are watching than any other event. This is the biggest advert for the sport there is, so we'll see something this year. And it might be Luke Humphries going back to back. It might be Luke Littler winning his first World Championship title. It might be something completely different. It might be Andrew Gilding becoming world champion. And then we'll know. The real barometer of how big this sport can get is when the Andrew Gilding Germany fan club grows from 2 members to 3 members to 4 billion members. That'll be when we know we've made it.
Finally, Dan, let's enjoy the World Championship during the next weeks, and we will spare you a World Championship winner prediction right now, but obviously we want to know which 8 players will make it into the next year's Premier League.
Oh, the Premier League. So much rests on the World Championship. I think there's 3 that are guaranteed to be in there, the 2 Lukes and Van Gerwen. And I think it's pretty much free. It's up for grabs after that. I personally think Stephen Bunting will get in. I think that he's got a big TV title. He's been one of the best players all year. And I think he's probably going to be dangerous at the World Championship. I think there will be a Belgian in there, whether that is Dimitri or Mike Dedeka, I think will solely come down to the World Championship and who does best. If they both do well, they could both be in there. But it wouldn't surprise me if we're talking about Martin Schindler, if he found his way through to the semi-finals, the World Championship, it wouldn't surprise me if they put him in. It would not surprise me at all. But there'll be, both finalists will be in there. So if Wessel Naiman reaches the final, even if he loses it, then he'll probably go straight into the Premier League. There are some players who have to do less than others to get in. Somebody like Nathan Aspinall, fan favourite, great doing the interviews, good to watch. We know he's a quality player. The bloke's won the World Match Play. He's probably not in at the minute. He hasn't done enough. But if he has a good World Championship and it's gets to the point where, Nathan Aspinall, semi-final of the Worlds, or somebody else who's had a better year but reached the quarterfinals or reached the semis as well, they might just go for Nathan Aspinall. So I don't know. It's all up in the air, but I think we will see those 3 I mentioned, the 2 Lukes, Van Gerwen, Bunting, let's say Dedeka, because I think he'll be decent. I think Gary Anderson might turn it down even if it was offered him. So
Rob Cross, number 4 of the
Cross
world.
Rob Cross is a very good shout. Yeah, Rob Cross. Let's put Rob Cross in. How many is that? Then 2 more. Andrew Gilding and Steve Beaton to drag him back out of retirement. How's that?
Obviously.
That's
good.
That's a very good call. I would take that for sure. Very nice. So one very last question to you in this podcast. People don't know about that. You've texted us some minutes before the call started that we are not going to be able to see you in this recording as we didn't do in the last hour. Why is this the case?
Well, okay, yeah. So we have done this chat for an hour and I can see you, but you can't see me, which I do feel slightly rude, but it isn't entirely my fault. It's because I'm having to use a different laptop because the one I would use normally, which has a camera, the cat sat on it and it broke. It hasn't worked since. Now, I don't know if the cat sitting on it is what broke the laptop. It's not even my cat. It lives next door. It just comes in my house all the time. And I think it might have done several hundred quid's worth of damage to my equipment, which I'm probably going to need at Ali Pali, to be fair. So if something goes horribly wrong at Alexandra Palace, and I'm going to blame this cat because it's completely wrecked all my preparation.
Last but not least, Dan, to round this episode off, we have a special treat for our listeners. Micha has prepared a poem. I haven't heard it yet.
Why are you laughing?
No. Of course we're going to end with a poem. I'm on a German darts podcast. Yeah, we end with a poem. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's a German poem I wrote for this podcast for this very special occasion.
And I never heard it yet. So, Dan, we are the first 2 listeners.
Wow. I feel privileged.
Yeah. Let me read. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Folge 501. Dieser Meilenstein ist jetzt deins und meins. 501 ist nicht nur eine Zahl. Beim Darts ist dies der heilige Gral. Wie viele Stunden wir auch füllten, wir uns niemals in den Mantel des Schweigens hüllten. Wenn wir das ein oder andere Mal kritisiert haben, wollten wir niemals irgendwem schaden. Und viele Male, wenn die Zuschauer toben, konnten wir die Spieler nur loben. Von Littler Price, von Gerwen Ethaus, über die Premier League zum Masters oder wie Peter Wright sagen würde, Mickey Mouse. Aber sei's drum. Der Sport nimmt gerade eine tolle Entwicklung. Weniger gibt's zu gewinnen für die alte Garde, aber naja, so ist Dart eben gerade. Und wir sind hautnah mit dabei. Draußen ganz viele Hörer und wir zwei. Ein besonderes Lob muss ich aber dir, Kevin, zollen. Du machst das schon seit zig Jahren länger, das muss man schon wollen. Nun bedanken wir uns aber auch bei der ganzen Hörerschaft, bei Gästen Kevin, Jan, Ben und wer hier noch so mitschafft. Doch seid gewiss, 501 ist nicht unser Ziel. Es beginnt jedes Mal aufs Neue. Das ist unser Spiel.
Wow. Wow. Hang on, I've got a button here. There we go.
Thank you.
That is going to start. You can't see this, obviously, because I haven't got a camera, but I am crying here. That is genuinely emotional. I understood about 8% of it, but the bits that I did, it really, really, really felt it. Thanks, man.
And thank You're you welcome. Very much, Micha. From the bottom of my heart, that was crazy.
Yeah.
It was
You're
great.
You're so welcome. You can't imagine, Kevin.
And then 8% is a good amount.
Yeah.
Thank Better you than very bunting. Much.
But yeah, obviously better than bunting, yeah.
8% is probably the percentage, the amount I understand in a Gary Anderson interview as well.
Yeah, that's who's been your hardest one to interview? Has it been Anderson? Just
it is Anderson in Frankfurt at the World Cup.
Ah,
that was crazy stuff.
Yeah. Have you interviewed Chizzy?
No, not yet.
No, me personally not, because last time Chizzy winning last year at the Worlds, I think I was inside the venue. I regret the chance. I do not understand what he says to me. So,
yeah, look, we get that as well. But that's fine. Dave Chisnell is a legend of the game, but a very tricky one to interview when you're speaking a second language.
And Kevin, maybe you've missed your chances to interview him now, because right now there are not many chances interviewing him after he won something.
Oh, right. This podcast is over. I'm not having any Dave Chisnell slander. That's done. Right, hang on.
Because he loses to Ricky Evans, who's a good one as well. So
Ricky Evans, yes, that's true. That's true. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I'm sorry I've disappointed you. I've rambled on for an hour there and given you nothing, have I? I've just chatted absolute rubbish about darts. But congratulations on your 501st episode. We have filled it with nonsense.
Thank you very much, Dan, and see you in London.
Yes,
after Christmas.
After Christmas.
I will be there.
Excellent. I will see you at the palace, my friends.
Thank you very much, Dan, for taking your time. I think this is the right time to end this episode here right now. And thank you to everyone who listened to us this time and all the other 500 times. So thank you very much. And until tomorrow, when the World Darts Championship starts.
And danke schön.
Do another poem.
I don't have another poem. Okay.
Lovely. Right.
Bye-bye, Dan. Thank you very much.
No way. Apologies if I've just chatted absolute bollocks at you there, but quantity over quality. There you go. Matt, you've got a lot of time.
It Cheers. Was great. Bye-bye.
Cheers.